Good morning. We're glad you're here. If you're a guest, we're especially glad you're hanging out with us today. We are studying through the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, a great book, a book where this man who was king, who had everything, I mean, he had riches, he had women, he had he was a guy who did the volume thing. He was a guy who had access to any resources he wanted and found that those things didn't please. And he's kind of dealing with, how do I find real value and meaning in life? And kind of to point, this is kind of where Ecclesiastes has been. The first several chapters, we kind of kept our themes up here so you can see them. The first several chapters, he talked about his pursuit of happiness, all the things that he tried to try to bring happiness and joy and just a sense of life matters. And he tried pleasure, he tried money, he tried wisdom, he tried learning, he tried power. And his conclusion is that all those things, they are just vanity. They are chasing after the wind. They are fleeting. It's like a puff of air when you go out into the winter and you breathe and then it's gone. And what he basically says is, listen, this is life. Life is vain, purposeless. It's like a puff of vapor, and then it's gone. And if that's all you live life for, you're going to realize it's fleeting and it doesn't fulfill. And so then he takes a step back and he says, listen, I'm going to look at these deep struggles of life. And if you've been here the last few weeks, I've kind of been joking about the fact that you're eventually going to be painting your toenails and your fingernails black and dye your hair, because he deals with the really hard questions. Questions like, how do I look death in the eye? Why is there injustice in the world? And what do I do about it? Why do we see so much oppression? Why is the human heart so messed up? And he's interacted with these questions, and he's kind of dealt with them, and he doesn't really give these, all right, here's the question now. Let me give you a nice, neat, cookie-cutter little answer. Because a lot of these questions, we just eventually have to fall at the feet of God and trust him. We will not get all of the answers. But what Solomon is going to start doing the next few weeks is he's going to start saying, okay, with these questions looming and realizing that in the pursuit of happiness, everything I pursued did not fulfill, what do you do? What now? The recent movie, The Bucket List, we showed you a scene. We're going to be showing you clips for the next several weeks because we're kind of taking this section of Ecclesiastes and kind of theming it around that movie. If you haven't seen it, while there are things in the movie that I was like, okay, that's a little far-fetched and I'm not endorsing everything, I thought it was a good look at some of the struggles that even Solomon brings up in Ecclesiastes, some of the deep questions, and what do you do with them? As you heard in this little clip, the two characters played by Morgan Freeman and Jack Nicholson are dealing with death that is pretty close. In fact, they both have been given a very short term, less than a year to live in the story. And so they, one of the characters, Morgan Freeman's character, starts writing this list of things that he wants to accomplish before he dies. And like he says, it's kind of more of a philosophical interaction with it. But what Nicholson's character does is he's a very wealthy man. He takes the list, adds to it, and then says, we can pull this off. And the story is about them trying to do everything that's on their kick the bucket list. And as they deal with it, man, some great deep spiritual issues come out. Nicholson, really in the movie, is Solomon. He has done all the stuff that Solomon's done, and he's ended up in the same place where it's dark and depressed and it hasn't satisfied. But the bottom line is, in this list, there's this interaction with, man, from here to that day, how do I make this thing work? How do I make this life that I have, this one life I have to live, how do I make this life have value? How do I make it worth it? Or will I just get to the end, look back on my life and go, wow, I don't know that this was worth the trip. And the challenge that Solomon's going to give us is he's going to tell us, listen, there are some things that we need to be attentive to, some things we need to get on a bucket list, some things we need to make sure that we are intentionally integrating into our lives so that the journey from here to that day, those struggles, will be one that we look back on and we go, you know, it's what God intended it to be. We live in a broken, fallen world. There's a lot of big questions. But God has given us some things that helps us as people make it through and make sense of the world that we live in and the struggles that we have. And so that's kind of, we're theming this the bucket list, and you can see the first thing on our bucket list is to find a true friend. And this is where Solomon kind of lands. As he, you know, the last chapter and a half has raised these huge questions that you know, I don't know if you felt the tension going home if you've been here of, okay, I felt that. I don't know that Mike or the scriptures gave me all the answers. I have hope in them, but wow, these are tough things. What Solomon's going to tell us is, listen, God may not give us answers, but what he does, the beauty of what he does by grace in our lives is instead of giving us all the answers, he gives us a people. He gives us community. He gives us connections. He gives us relationships. And as he deals with these great struggles, the answer for us as followers of Jesus, or for those who are seeking God, are not to come up with all the solutions to these great questions. The answer is to make sure that we are walking through life with a people who are following Jesus and that we do it together. That is where life is going to connect. It's going to make sense, and there's going to be a flow, a rhythm, a purpose in community. But what's happened in America, here's the amazing thing. What's happening in America is we are drifting farther and farther and farther away from even having any framework to understand what real community is, what real relationships are, what real connections are. We are a world that believes community is something that I do on a computer now. And instead of something that I do in real relationships with people, community in kind of our culture is MySpace, where I sit at a computer and I talk to people who may or may not be real often. Hopefully most of them are friends, but, you know, and it's not real interaction with real people. It's interaction with the idea of a person on a computer. And there's a guy who wrote a book. His name is Robert Putnam, and the name of the book is Bowling Alone. These statistics I'm going to share with you come from that book. In this book, he basically looked at American culture, and he looked at this issue of, are people living in community? And he did a study of how things have changed over the last 25 years. Listen to some of these. He says in the book that card playing is down 25%. Over the last 25 years, card playing, you know, just people gathering, getting together, sitting around playing bridge or poker or, well, poker's probably up because, you know, you can do internet, but the card playing thing is down, sitting around playing spades. I went all the way through college. I skipped most, about half of my classes in college because I was in the middle of a spades game. That's my story of college, okay? And so, but that's down. I'm with it. I don't play cards like I used to. I don't get together with people and play cards. People in bars, going to bars and hanging out with a crowd of people they know, kind of the cheers, everybody knows your name, that's down 40% in America. Interesting. What is up is people going to coffee shops, where I go to a place with my computer and sit with a bunch of lonely people all in one big place, but we're all at our own table doing our own thing, instead of sitting in a bar. People going to full-service restaurants is down 25%. But going to a fast food place where I can order through a clown who talks to me and then go pick stuff up from a teenager in a uniform and drive away is up 50%. You know, so this sitting down interaction. Having a social evening with someone in your neighborhood is down 33%. Membership and participation in clubs, you know, the different organizations that people have always been a part of, down 58%. Family dinners, down 33%. Having friends over to one's home is down 45%, but taking care of pets is up 58%, which means I'd rather be with Fido than the neighbors. I'd rather take care of my dog and my cat than interact with anybody in my neighborhood or to have friends over to my house. Going to church is down 20%. And the title of his book, he found that bowling is up 10%. But leagues are down 40%. People want to go bowl by themselves or with just a few people and then leave instead of being part of a community that does this over a period of time. So leagues are down 40%. And what he basically says in this book, and this is kind of where I'm going with this, is that we live in a culture that has become disconnected. And a lot of times as people of faith, we try to figure out why isn't this thing working for me? And the answer that Solomon's going to give us as we interact with brokenness and hurt and the deep questions of life is that God, by his grace, the way he walks us through it is he gives us a people. So what I need to do is I need to take you through the whole Bible and explain how this looks in the Bible. Because, see, the Bible starts with God. But the thing you need to realize in Christian belief, God is Trinitarian. Now, this is a deep mystery. I'm not going to be able to explain this to you in depth, but here's the basic idea. We have one God who exists in three persons who lives eternally in a perfect community of relationships. We have a personal God that has always existed in community. When he made us, the Bible teaches us that he made people, made the first two people, made you and me in the image of God, which means we were created to be like him, which means a large part of our existence, our spiritual DNA is that we are created for community. We are created for relationships. And God makes the first two people, Adam and Eve, to live in perfect community, first of all with himself and then with each other. He puts these two people in a garden and they have this perfect, beautiful, loving community with each other, and they have this wonderful connection, this wonderful, deep relationship with their creator. But what happens is the story goes on is that Adam and Eve, the first two people, made the same decision that we make every day, and that decision is I'm going to live for myself, not for living in community and relationship. And Adam and Eve choose to rebel against God, choose to break off the relationship with their creator. And the immediate result, even in the fall, is God explains the curse, what's going to take place in this world. If you study it, you will find that a large part of the explanation of the fallenness of our existence is that the connection that we were created for is broken. Our connection with God is severed. We are broken. We are disassociated, disconnected from him. And the result is that in our relationships with others, those relationships are absolutely messed up, broken, in conflict, and we struggle with those. And in the garden, in the failure, in sin, we lost our sense of community, of connection. This comes out in the fourth chapter of the Bible. Everything I've just told you is in Genesis chapter 1, 2, and 3. In chapter 4, we see this clearly. As Adam and Eve have their first two sons, a son named Cain, a son named Abel, they both are trying to worship God, but Cain kind of worships God in a way that is contrary to God's desire. Kind of comes to God on his own terms and says, listen, I don't care what you want. I can do whatever I want, and you're going to have to be okay with that, God. And God does not accept his offering. But Abel comes with a heart that desires to please and honor God. So we see this vertical relationship, and we see the brokenness in Cain. And what he does is because God honors Abel but doesn't honor him, Cain kills his brother. And we have the first murder in the Bible. And this is the story of the Bible, that there is brokenness, there is disconnect, there is a sense of I am in life, it's hard, it's difficult. And now as I try to live in a relationship with people, I'm butting heads, it's broken, it's hurt, and I don't know how to do this. And then God in his grace begins to work in the lives of people. He calls a guy named Abraham. He calls this family. This family becomes a nation. And what he does is he gives these people an identity and calls them into community together. This nation is the nation of Israel. And his call to them is, listen, love me, love your neighbor as yourself, care for the widow and the orphan, do justice, and live in community with each other. That's my purpose for you. There are times in their existence where they do that. There are times in their existence where it doesn't. It looks just like Cain and Abel. As they're broken with God, they're broken with each other. But then Jesus shows up. Out of this nation, this man Jesus shows up. He lives a perfect life. He forms a community with around him with these 12 guys. Bible tells us that the Bible calls these men disciples. He forms this perfect dudes group. They are hanging out in perfect community. They have conflict. They have brokenness. They fall. They make mistakes. But Jesus and the purpose of Jesus holds them together. And then Jesus dies to restore and renew the relationship that they have with their creator. And what happens in Acts, the book of Acts, is that the community that God intended in the garden is restored in those who are followers of Jesus. In fact, when you call something a church, if you were to go look at the New Testament, which is written in the Greek language, you would find that everywhere the word church is, we think of institution, we think of building, we think of going to a Sunday morning crowd, we think of hearing a band or some kind of worship, doing sacraments. We think of hearing some guy stand up and shout at me for a period of time, and then me going home and having meatloaf afterwards, and then sitting around going, man, did you hear where he messed up that verse? And man, he said that. Man, he yelled too much today, and that's church. But the New Testament, the Greek word for church, literally means an assembly of people who are called out to live in community. Everywhere you look at that word, if you read the word church in the New Testament, it does not refer to a Sunday morning meeting. It refers to a people in community. And what the Bible is teaching, and what we're going to find out in Solomon, is that the answer to the brokenness, the answer to the struggle, the answer to these big life questions, we may not get perfect why answers, but we do get who answers. God puts us in community. And we need to make sure that we are intentional about finding people to do life with. And this is my argument, because I think it's Solomon's argument. I think it's Solomon's bucket list thing here, okay? Is that spirituality and the Christian faith will never fully work until you are willing to get involved and do community with a group of people who are on the journey with you. It's never going to fully, you're going to be like Solomon where you're like, man, I have all these big questions. I want to go hear a preacher talk about them. But then you hear somebody, you listen online, you listen to shows, you read books, but still life doesn't resolve because you understand it here, but that's not it. Living in community is the way God designed faith to be done. And that's what Solomon is about to tell us. He doesn't answer the question, all these big questions, but what he says is, listen, two are better than one. Live in community. So let's look at this. Ecclesiastes, if you have your Bible, Ecclesiastes chapter 4, we'll be reading verses 9 through 16. Many of you have been part of a friendship that is like this, okay? This is not the kind of community we want. These two guys are out in the woods, and all of a sudden, this big bear comes out of a cage. And the big bear raises up on his all fours and roars at them. And then the big bear gets down like he's about to chase him, and one of the guys turns to the other guy, sits down on a rock, rips out his backpack, and starts pulling out running shoes. And his other friend, as he's getting ready to take off, going, what are you doing? You are not going to be able to outrun that bear. I don't care what kind of shoes you're wearing. You are not going to be able to outrun that bear. And the one friend looked back at the other and said, I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you. That may be the type of community you've experienced. I hope at Genesis that's not what you get, okay? And this is what Solomon's pointing us to. If you don't have a Bible, at the end of your rows, we have Bibles for you. We would love for you to take one of those Bibles. We'll be in page 471 in that Bible. Read that Bible with us. And if you don't have a good Bible at home for yourself, for your family, for your kids, take one of those. We would love to give that to you as a gift. Give them away to friends, all that stuff. We love giving the scriptures away. We'll be on page 471 in that Bible. And here's what it says. Chapter 4, verse 9. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. Now, we'll come to the other verses in a few minutes. But do you see, it's almost like it's out of place. He's talking about all these big questions. And then he says, listen, if you're on a journey and you're on that journey alone, there's trouble. But two people who go on that journey, who live in community, who are doing the journey together, this entire passage, what Solomon does is he pictures for us a guy who's on a road or who's on a journey and who's trying to walk through the struggles of life. And the question is, do I do it alone or do I have somebody to walk through this with me? And what I want to do this morning is first of all, I just want to raise this argument that the Christian life is designed to live with people and that we need to be involved living community. I'm going to try to give some application of that at the end of the message here this morning. And so this morning I want to talk about the reality that we need community because we need some friends who do some things with us. Especially now, you can get this level of community with people who don't have faith with you. You can be the cheers type of community. And I think God, that shows grace that people can live in relationship. But ultimately, I want to challenge you that you need to find people who are on the same faith journey with you, who will walk through life with you. And in that context, even though you may not get all the answers to your questions, you will get a framework to walk through them in community. Now, I'm just telling you, I saw this. Last 3 weeks, you know, my mother-in-law died. Over there, the massive outpouring of love to the family, most of which came from the flow of faith in my in-laws' lives and their church and the people. But also you, those of you who showed up, who brought meals, who loved on us, I just got to tell you the depth of appreciation and the fact that I knew that I was in a community that was beautiful and loved us was huge. You need a community that can walk through this with you, these sort of things. And the first thing he says is that you need community that will prepare you for the journey. Look at verse 9 again. He says, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. He says, listen, two people who are doing the toil, doing the work together have a better reward. Very interesting here. If you take a step back and study the entire book of Ecclesiastes, because the word toil here is used about 70 times. It's used all throughout this book to refer not just to my 9-to-5, not just to me working, whatever my job is, but it's just the toil of life. It's gardening, and I do my garden, and I pull weeds, and I come back tomorrow, and there are more weeds there. I mow my grass, and tomorrow it's growing again, and it just seems like this endless monotony of doing life. And what Solomon keeps saying is, I want to find purpose in my toil. I want to find meaning in my toil. I want to find a reward for the toil of my life. And this has been his conclusion all the way through here. You can't miss this to understand this verse. His conclusion all the way through Ecclesiastes so far is, I can't find meaning. I can't find any real reward in the toil. So the best I can hope for is just to enjoy it. That's the best I can hope for until he gets here. And he says, two are better than one. Why? Because they will have a good reward for their toil. He said, man, as I walk through life and I do the toil of life, the work that I have to do, the living under the sun and the hardness of life, I can't find meaning, but when I do it with somebody, when I have community, somehow the hardness of life, I have a good reward for that. I have people to walk through it with me, and all of a sudden, this journey of life, this purpose, this journey that I'm on, there is a good reward for that. I have something to celebrate and people to celebrate it with. I have the hard days, I'm not doing it alone. And I think Solomon, on one hand, is thinking, literally, two people working together can probably have a better business than one person doing it by themselves. But you need to understand, Solomon is interacting with much bigger questions than, can I make twice as much money or half as much? He is helping us interact with these hard issues. And he says, listen, work is hard, life is toilsome, and every day I go home and I feel like, wow, I just can't make sense of this. But when I have somebody to walk through life with me, something happens. There is a reward, a value. Those who were with us very early in the life of Genesis can explain and help understand. I mean, just I'm kind of speaking for them, but I think they would say that we worked hard to make this church a reality. And there were times where there'd be 2, 3, 4 months where it was like, man, we're up to our armpits. We all have our own jobs. We all have our own life. We all have our own stuff to do. We are working so hard, and we wouldn't see a whole lot happen. And those times, we would kind of depend on each other. But then when God blesses us in some way as a church, we also have so much to celebrate because we really were living in community. And see, this is what's being taught here and elsewhere in the scriptures. We need people to do faith with. We need people to do life with, because it's in doing that with them that the journey begins to have purpose and value and meaning. And this is what Solomon's saying here. He's saying, listen, when we go through the journey, we need to be like people who are broken and struggling, but we have somebody to walk through it with. It's like these ladies. I heard this story, these two ladies who went to a nursing home. Both of them had strokes. One had had a stroke that totally affected her right side of her body. One had had a stroke that totally affected their left side of their body. And the two of these two ladies both had played piano in the past and were kind of grieving that they couldn't continue with that. And somebody, one of the nurses at the nursing home, found this out, and they had a piano, and so they sat these two ladies down, and these two ladies learned how to literally play for everybody there, one lady playing the left side notes, one lady playing the right side notes, and the beautiful harmony of them coming together and doing life together when they just couldn't quite do it alone. Isn't that cool? Isn't that beautiful? I think there's a picture of what God is providing in his people. Now, I'm going to be honest and tell you that that doesn't always happen. I mean, there's a nice, neat, easy formula. Go join a group and everything will be great. And sometimes it's very hard work to get to this point in relationships. And superficial relationships aren't going to get there. It takes jumping in and getting up to my armpits with people that sometimes really annoy the devil out of me. I better not go any farther because I'll offend somebody. Because it might be you. Probably is. And you might come to me after church and say, I want to be in your community group. And I may be on the inside going, oh, please, not them. And I'm kidding. but this is one of the big answers. And see, what I'm trying to tell you is, for so many people in so many places, church is a Sunday morning event. And you go to church, you evaluate church, but you can't ever get over those humps in life because we're like the book here, you know, we're not doing community, we're not involved with people, we're trying to do life on the back porch just by ourselves, and faith was never designed to do that way. It is in community where God gives us purpose for the journey. Second thing he says, listen, we need community and friends that will pick you up when you're down. Verse 10, look at this. He says, for if they fall, one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him who's alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. He says, man, you're on the journey and you trip and fall, you're bleeding, you know, you're cut up, you're banged up, you're struggling. If you have to get up and go on alone, it's brutal. But man, if you have somebody there who will scoop you up, and I want to tell you, church, Genesis Church, is not a place that you have to be perfect. Hopefully our community groups, when you live community here, it can be a place where you can fall. I know what it's like to wake up on Sunday morning, to kick the dog on the way out of bed because you really don't want to get out of bed, to get in a fight with your wife over stuff that doesn't matter, and to have the kids screaming and crying down the hallway, to be fighting all the way here, to get to the point where you're like, we're just going to take separate cars because it's not even fun to ride together. To pull in the parking lot and give that look like this is not over. And then turn and walk in and put a smile and somebody goes, how's life? And you go, oh, it is so good. We are so blessed. And that's crap. Biblical community is a safe place to fall. As a pastor, it is so hard. Because sometimes if I expose the soft parts, and I mean there's a lot of them, but if I expose the soft parts and don't keep my armor on, sometimes the church of Jesus Christ, for some reason, is the only army in the world that shoots its wounded. And that's not what God designed. Now, there are some times where the fall is so brutal that, like in ministry, people do need to step aside from ministry. But I want to let you know that in the midst of it, God's design for community is it's a safe place to fall. It's a safe place to be honest and say, listen, I really do love Jesus deeply, but I really ran from him this week. I really ended up on internet sites where I shouldn't have been. I really ended up screaming at my kids and really stinking as a parent. I really did struggle with envy over my neighbor's new car. I really did drink way too much last night. I really did mess up. And I love Jesus. I know that's not what life's supposed to be like, but I need a people who will pick me up when I fall. And what Solomon says is, woe to the person who falls alone. And this is the existence of so many people who are living, who are trying to live the Christian life, is that they are not in community. And when even if they are, when they fall, they don't want anybody to know. They want to be the tree that falls in the forest and nobody hears it. Did it really fall? That's what we want. And what Solomon's trying to say is, listen, when you fall, you need somebody, a couple people who will grab you by the arm, lift you up, dust off your bruises, clean up your scrapes, and say, listen, we're going to hold you up for a little while because we know you can't walk alone for a little while. We're going to walk with you. That's community. That's what Solomon's saying. I can't answer these big life questions. They're huge. I can't make sense, but I have a people who walks through me with me when I fall. Third thing he says is this. He says, you need a people who are present when you're lonely. Verse 11. He says, again, if two lie together, they keep warm, but how can one keep warm alone? Now, I know some of you single guys want this as your life verse. Yeah, see, it even says there in the Bible, you're like, hey, if you lie alone, that's not what he's talking about here, okay? He's talking about being on these journeys in these arid desert places that the Middle East is made up of, that really hot days, really cold nights. And the idea is not anything that's anywhere near sexual. It's the idea of being close when you're all there is. When you're out in the wilderness and there are all kinds of wild animals and all kinds of weather elements and all this stuff, and you are alone, you are much better off in those times where it's freezing to be close to somebody than to do that alone. And so you have somebody who's present when you're lonely. You have somebody who's there when you feel like, I mean, when you're like Solomon earlier in this passage, where you're like, I have all these life questions, and I just feel by myself. One of the things in that book that I referenced is that one of his conclusions in the book is that America is the most socially interactive and the most lonely culture on the planet. We know more people, but we have fewer real relationships than anywhere else in the world. We are not connected. And so when I have those times where I just feel alone, if I don't have a people that's around me, that's praying for me, that's with me, that's walking through it with me, if I don't have people who the image here, to lie close to when it's cold, how do I make it? How do I get through this thing? And the answer, especially for us dudes, okay, let's be honest, men, is that we put on a tough facade. On the inside, like, we're really bummed out, and it's hard, and we're hurting, but we don't want anybody to know there's a crack in the armor, and so we put on this tough facade, and we don't let anybody in. But we'll never experience true depth in our spirituality, our relationship with God, as long as we don't have people walking through this when we're in those broken places. See, in the next few weeks, and just kind of in form of announcement, we're going to start getting our guys together. I believe in men being men who are strong, who love Jesus, but do it in manly ways, okay? I don't think you always have to have pink fluffy stuff and a Jesus with like feathered hair and a pink dress on to really be a cool Christian guy, all right? I think you can shoot things for Jesus, okay? I'm not quite sure where that fits in all of theology, but I do believe in red meat, deeply. Chili's a good thing, okay? And it needs to be hot. And one of the things we're going to start doing as a church is we're going to start finding ways to get men to hang out together and just to figure out what it means to be men who really have a real spirituality together. Okay, so you'll see the first thing in your worship folder. We just this week bought 25 tickets to a Mizzou football game. It's a dude's trip. Ladies, if you want to go see Mizzou football, you're gonna have to pick another, and this is not a date day, okay? I'm sorry, I really am. But we're gonna grunt and make bodily noises and probably not smell good, okay? It's a dude's time. But we're doing this because men need what the scripture is calling for, and a lot of times we don't know how to get it because most of the time you show up and everything has pink ruffles on it, right? Because we need this too, guys. We need to figure out what it means to have spirituality but do it with a group where I don't always have to put on the facade. I can say, listen, it's cold. I need somebody that will do this where I'm not alone. Now, I'm not saying you should go like in a tent and lie next to each other. That's awkward. I get that, okay? But you need to do life with people. It's God's design, all right? And so when you're alone, the fourth thing he says is he says, you know, you also need friends who will protect you when you're helpless. Verse 12, and though a man might prevail against one who's alone, two will withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. He says, listen, you need friends, you need community, because there are times where the enemies of life are going to come at you. Life is going to cause you to need to do life in such a way, and you're going to look at those enemies, and if you're all by yourself, man, it's going to kick your butt. It's going to take you down. It's going to wear you out. You're not going to be able to make it. I mean, we're talking desert. We're talking roads here where if you're, like, walking around, some guy jumps out, he's a robber. It's one-on-one, and that guy knows, you know, some stuff, and unless you get the martial arts thing, you're probably in trouble. And if he's a really big guy, maybe the martial arts thing doesn't work for you, all right? So, but you're alone. But man, if you have your other friend who like walks around the corner is like, hey, you're gonna have to take on both of us. You can make it through those times. There are times in life where the enemies of life come at us with both barrels blazing. And if we go into those times all by ourselves, if we go into those times just trying to make life work, we're like, I can do it, I'm strong enough. The answer is no, you're not. We need people to go into the battles of life with us, praying with us, walking with us, being with us, taking those things on with us, because we cannot. I'm telling you, as a person, as your pastor or leader, I cannot take on the enemies of life alone. God did not design it that way. And so the bottom line is that we need people to face those challenges, those enemies. I got an email this week from a guy who's a friend of mine, who's a guy who's kind of on the journey like we are. He planted a church, and we kind of got this community of people that are church planters. We do a lot of stuff where we just hang together. We pray for each other. Man, his whole deal was, I'm planting this church. I've got a group of people. And one of the core families raised some accusations that are not true about me. But man, it's going to create a mess. What he's saying is, listen, the enemies come at me. I need some people who can walk through it with me, because I know it's going to take me down if I don't. We need that. We need that. And so my conclusion is this, that God's desire for you is, first of all, it is to save you. It is for you to find community with God again. This God who is three in one, who lives in a perfect community, who doesn't need us, but chose to create us in his image. And for us to experience, first of all, community, relationship, connection with our Savior. To know God in a friendship sort of way. In fact, in John chapter 15, verses 13 through 15, Jesus is talking, and he says that... in the passage, in John chapter 15, verses 13 through 15, he says, here it is, greater love has no one than this, that someone laid down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. Do you hear what he's saying? He is saying, first of all, to these men that he called out and created a community with, but speaking through that even to us, to say, listen, I don't just call you servants. You, if you know me, if you're doing what I commanded, if you're following me, you are my friend. One of the interesting things about this passage, in verse 12, it says that, you know, a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. And then he throws in this phrase, a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Very random phrase, but most people in church history have said this is an image of two people who have Christ, who have God in the midst. And it is the winding of a rope, and that third cord in that winding of a rope makes it almost unbreakable. God wants to change your life. He wants to make you a different person. He wants you to come to him, trust him, repent of sins, and know your Creator as he created you to do. And Jesus gave his life so that we can know him. But then God also wants to take us and give us a people to do life and grace and faith with. Some of you here today, you may be kind of in that stage where like, I'm still exploring faith. You can still get plugged into a people, but I want you to know God wants to change your life by knowing him. Some of you may be here and you just like, you've been hanging out in church, you've been going to church as an event, but you've never really become involved in church as a people. And I want to tell you up front, it's kind of hard. It takes getting connected and getting involved with a group. At Genesis, we do community. We do this level of relationship. You can't do it here on Sunday morning. Nick stands up and says, all right, go greet a few people you don't know. That's meeting a few people. That's not what we're talking about here. We do this level of life in what we call community groups. We're going to be launching community groups in the next few weeks. We're going to have about six of them where you can get plugged in with a group of people. I know some people are like, all right, I've done a small group before, and there was that weird guy who talked all the time, and then that other girl who was like a leech, and the whole time I was there, it was like all of life was about her problems, and so that scares me. I can't go back. Okay, people have had those experiences. I'm not denying that, but I jump in, plug in, stay long enough to get to know a group of people. You need these things in your life. Rest of life won't make sense. Spirituality, unless you have these type of people walking through it with you. Now, what he's done, and I don't have a lot of time, I'm just going to skim this real quick. What he's done in this passage is he's given us several things that are barriers to that. And they're listed in your worship folder. And they're in this passage. One of the things he's pointing out to us, there are things that become barriers to people living in community that will get them off track. In verse 4, he talks about jealousy. He talks about envy, that all of our work is out of envy for what others have. Man, if we're always jealous of one another and you know, we're always trying to compete, it's going to be a barrier to community. Laziness in verse 5. You know, somebody who just, all they want to do is sit around and be that person who just like sucks the life out of everybody else. That is a barrier to community. In community, you and I need to be willing to roll up our sleeves and do the hard work of building relationships and doing life so that sometime we are the ones who are stepping from around the rock to protect our friend and hold him up, and sometimes we're the one who falls and who needs somebody to be there with us. I can't always be the one who somebody has to come alongside, and that's it. I have to be both sides of this. Dissatisfaction in life in verse 6, business in verse 8, busyness that man, I just always have too much to do. I've got to work, I've got to do, and I can never make it to a group, and this is our lives, okay? We have kids soccer, we have kids sports, we have jobs, we have community stuff, we're up to our eyeballs with stuff to do, and the idea of finding a night to do community, and that robs us from what God has created us for. Busyness. And the last thing is politics. Verse 13 through 16, I'll read this real quick and kind of unpack it, and then we'll pray and worship. Better was the poor and wise youth than an old foolish king who no longer knew how to take advice. For he went from prison to the throne. Though in his own kingdom he had been born poor. I saw all the living who move about under the sun along with that youth who was to stand in the king's place. There was no end of all the people, of all whom he had led. Yet those who come later will not rejoice in him. Surely this is also vanity in striving after the wind. Now let me explain this real quick, because it is kind of one of those things that connects to the entire idea of community. He takes us to an old king who doesn't live in community anymore. He won't take advice. He won't listen to anybody. And there's a young, wise youth. And he says that old king, even though he came, and he says from prison, literally he came from the depths of life, he had a group of people who walked with him, he became king, and now there's a younger man who's there to take his place. And guess who everybody wants to vote for? Everybody's on the side of the young guy who has all the answers. And so the old guy is left out. And everybody is, he's Joe popular, the politics of it, everybody wants to vote for this guy who wouldn't listen anymore, nobody likes him anymore, he gets thrown out of office, the new guy gets in office. And this is what Solomon's conclusion is. It won't be long till the young king is the old guy and somebody better comes along. And here's a point in community. In community, if life is about the pecking order, it'll never work. If we see ourselves as better, as the one who has all the answers, or if we think, man, if we only just had this guy in office or we had this guy leading, and this is what happens in church a lot. Man, our church would work if we just get a different pastor. That guy preaches way too long. If we had somebody who just went 20 minutes and then we could go to lunch and be like there way earlier, that would be cool. If we just had somebody younger, if we just had somebody older, if we just had somebody better looking, well, you can't do that with me, but if we just had somebody who was, and all of a sudden we're picking sides over leadership instead of living in community. This is what Solomon's saying. Instead of just living in community where you can be for Obama or for McCain, doesn't matter, let's do mission together. That's not the issue. See, what don't you talk about in groups? Don't talk about politics. Why? Because we're fighting. And I'm not saying you can't be for a person. That's not the point. But those things, whether it's politics in church, politics, they get in the way of community. And we need to take a step back and say, those things don't matter. What matters is we need to live faith with a group of people. Safe place to fall, a safe place to struggle, a place where I feel alone, people will come alongside me. And if you don't have that, you've got to have it. So we're going to close. Here's two real practical applications to my message. Number one, get involved in community that is with followers of Jesus somewhere. If you're hanging out at Genesis and this isn't the place for you, go find a church, get involved in community, do it. You will not experience all that spirituality has to offer until that's part of your life, until you have a people. If it is here, if you're new, you're just like kind of checking Genesis out, a great first place to start figuring that out is through our gospel class. We have a 5-week experience that is designed to build community and help people figure out what our church is about. Community groups are also a great place. We're kind of starting a push to say, hey, get involved. And we're going to have at least 6 groups that are going to be kicking off in the next few weeks. So there's the first one. The second thing is we've put in your worship folder this morning a thank you note. I understand this is, as we were talking about this week, they're like, all right, this is kind of frou-frou and kind of fluffy and kind of emotional. And some guys will be like, ugh, And if that's you, that's fine. We just put it there because I think one of the ways that we can work out this message is to acknowledge the people who have been this type of friend for us. So my encouragement to you is, if this is kind of the way you do life and the kind of language you speak, take that thank you note that we've given to you and write a note to somebody that just says, thank you for being this sort of friend in my life. If you are like, that scares me, I don't even know how to write my name, and that freaks me out, do it in the form of a phone call, of going to a ball, whatever it is. Find some way to express to people who've been this sort of friend, express that, man, that means a lot to you and it's mattered in your life, okay? That's just something for you to maybe give you an idea to get the ball rolling on that being part of it. But find community. I'm going to pray. The band's going to come out here. We're going to worship Jesus because he is the one who offers all this. It is because of Jesus that we can have this level of relationship. And so as we worship Jesus, we need to have community with him as well. As we worship and we sing, we're going to be taking up an offering. We're going to be passing offering plates. If you're a guest, we do not ask or even want you to give. This service is our gift to you. But we do an offering during our service because it is an act of worship for those who are part of Genesis, a way that we can give back and say, Jesus, we honor you because you love us so much. And so we'll be taking up an offering. We're going to sing, we're going to celebrate, we're going to honor God. So I'll pray, we'll stand, we'll worship. Jesus, we love you, we praise you. Thank you for the day. I just pray that you will help us to find the right place to do community, to have a group of people who walk through life with us. Thank you for the blessings that I've had in my life with these sorts of relationships. And thank you that this is a great place. It's safe to fall and struggle and be real. In your name I pray. Amen.